This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. It's now 7:36 a.m. on Thursday, the 29th of September. I'm Melissa Idris with Ibrahim Sani and Julian Ng. You're listening to The Morning Run. Now, coming up in the headlines today, we're going to take a look at news, including Takata's airbags. Now, there's a recent case, a fourth death in Malaysia involving a Takata airbag. Also, a mega deal in the brewer sector. So let's kick it off first with OPEC, where sources have said that OPEC has struck a deal to cut another deal to cut crude output at its November meeting in November 30th meeting in Vienna. So what happened was essentially in the sidelines of the International Energy Forum, which is happening now in Algiers, OPEC members apparently agreed to limit its production by nearly a million barrels a day to 32.5 million barrels. Now, this is, in fact, quite misleading. The headlines are quite misleading, right, Ibrahim, as Benley Brunt spoke to you this morning.
Yeah, so Benley Brunt spoke to me this morning talking about this particular agreement. He says, let's not get ahead of ourselves. This is essentially an agreement to make an agreement. And therefore, the impact of this particular oil freeze can only be seen 2 months from now. And the oil output agreement won't be completed until November 30th. But despite this fact, oil prices have surged more than 5%. And I think there is some sort of a halo effect to these kind of news. At least something is being seen to be done at the OPEC meetings.
Because almost nothing gets done, right?
I think the signaling is very important, because in the past, it's all about no deal, no deal. And now there is a suggestion towards some kind of deal. And I think sentiment-wise, it would be very positive for the Malaysian economy as well as the Malaysian stock markets, because we have a very meaningful revenue coming from oil and gas sector, as well as a sizable number of companies listed on the bursa with oil and gas factors. The thing is that our Malaysian budget has already assumed a $48 per barrel oil price. And that's where the Brent is today, jumping after this OPEC news. So it wouldn't add to the coffers, but from a sentiment viewpoint, I guess some of these guys can breathe easier with a suggestion of a deal.
But do you think we're getting ahead of ourselves? Because nothing concrete essentially has been done or agreed to. They're just saying that we're open to discussing this. Now, there are some energy analysts who say this is a historic deal. They're reading the same things you are, Jules, that this is in fact a signal. The first time OPEC and non-OPEC have agreed about something in over a decade. Whereas there are other analysts who say, well, you know, OPEC has generally not followed the rules, the adherence to quotas. They've generally kind of thrown that out the window. So perhaps it's still too early to be happy about
it. So the skepticism comes from the constituents of this particular agreement, right? Because if you think about it, if they do agree to this deal, Saudi will have to reduce their output by 350,000 barrels per day. And I don't know whether Saudi has the political will to actually do so. There's also another reason why skepticism is actually on the rise is because three countries will be excluded from this agreement, including Iran, Libya, and Nigeria. And therefore, they might ramp up their production and might defeat the whole purpose of this agreement in the first place. So these are the elements that are in play, adding to that skepticism among the traders.
That's the problem of setting up a cartel, right? Because members of the cartel have to play by the rules. If one of them decides to flout the rules, then the whole thing would fall apart. And I'm just wondering if this kind of deal had or suggestion of a deal could have come earlier, could this have saved some of the oil and gas specs from the kind of fate that they went through?
All right, 7:40 right now. Takata is in talks to resolve allegations of criminal wrongdoing after U.S. prosecutors found evidence of unlawful conduct in Takata's handling of their airbags. Now, prosecutors are considering charging Takata with criminal wire fraud after they determined that Takata made misleading statements about concealing information about airbags. Now, the airbags are known to spray metal shards when deployed. So here's Shigehisa Takada, CEO of Takata, making a public apology.
I want to firstly offer my heartfelt condolences to those who have lost their lives because of our damaged airbags. I also want to again apologise for the concern this fault may cause everyone.
There you go. That was the CEO of Takata making a public apology over its faulty airbags.
So this is on the back of a fresh piece of news that Honda has announced yesterday that the driver's side airbag has ruptured and killed a rider in Malaysia. And this had took place in Johor. So can you imagine that these Takata airbags keep on killing people despite the fact that they have recalled these kind of vehicles, despite the fact that all these safety measures have been taking place? It's still a danger and a hazard for motorists.
Yeah, I don't know what to make about the public apology. On one hand, it is an apology, and I guess many people would view that as commendable for a leader of an organization to come out and humble himself to apologize. But on the other hand, people have been killed, right? And this reminds me of that so-called statement of acknowledgement that Tony Blair made about the war crimes that were, you know, that they were found to have made in that whole Iraq situation. Also, the fact that Obama's veto of the 9/11
bill
allowing Americans to sue Saudi Arabia for 9/11, that has been overridden by the Congress. So I think there is a certain degree of accountability, a very high level of accountability that corporate leaders and political leaders have to engage in order to ensure public safety. This is not acceptable.
Wait, so you say that his apology is not enough?
How do you bring back lives?
I think the apology is important. I don't think it's the apology should be the only thing done. I think that all leaders of companies who have been found to, or companies or countries have been found to have done wrong should first of all apologize. Secondly, step down if it's necessary to take accountability. And thirdly, launch into the investigation to determine who's accountable and the right degree of compensation. Now, if you remember MRT...
How do you compensate deaths?
Okay,
though?
So MRT Corp, do you remember that that incident 2 years ago where it was, I think it was Dato Wira Azhar Hamid. He was a CEO of MRT Corp. During the construction, there was a worksite accident that killed a couple of people. I can't
actually
remember.
Very near my house in Kota Damansara.
I think it was two people who were killed, one or two people who were killed, and then another two still missing. They couldn't find the bodies. Now, he stepped down for that, and that was a commendable effort on his part. He said, I'm going to take responsibility for the actions of my company, and I'm going to step down. That was a good example of corporate accountability. Now, I think we should champion or applaud leaders who are brave enough to do that. Because I remember thinking after that story, thinking, oh, wow, we're actually applauding someone brave enough to do that in Malaysia because we're so unaccustomed to this.
But we still come back to the issue of deaths and public safety. It's one thing to be commendable about humbling yourself and apologizing to the public, but I just think that we need to get to the bottom of this very cancerous and flawed accountability system that we have among our leaders who pay a lot of lip service as to how accountable and transparent the country should be run when they themselves don't incorporate these kind of measures into their dealings because they want to make money, because they're thinking about the bottom line. Samsung is the other case, right? They in the quest to beat Apple at the game, they rushed the Galaxy Note 7, and now it's being...
There's
a global recall for that because it can explode in your face, right? Injury to your body and public safety. Apparently, the latest is that Samsung has exploding washing machines as well. So this is the kind of thing that if you just go chasing profits without any regard to public safety, I think it becomes a very cancerous society, regardless of whether any public apology is made or not.
But wouldn't the safeguard to that, Jules, be product liability? So when a company issues a product that is a danger
to
its user.
That's a deterrent, I think.
It's a deterrent. So now using the Samsung case, the product liability of Samsung is insane.
I'm saying that we should go for zero injuries. We should incorporate systems where you have zero injuries. And I think that the Petronas deal in Canada that we're going to discuss later is reflective of a government that wants to impose conditions on a corporation before harm is being done. You know, I think that's a good example of that.
We'll discuss that story about Petronas and the Canadian LNG project shortly. But first, let's give some. Let's look at AB InBev, which has gotten shareholder approval for its $100 billion+ takeover of rival SAB Miller. Now, the deal is expected to be completed in a couple of weeks, and once it's done, it will create the world's largest beer firm, which will produce a third of the world's beer capacity.
Now, this could change a new world order for the beer industry, and of course, being a Muslim, this is a non-halal business. I'm not condoning this, but I'm just saying that as a commentator, think about it this way. Right now, they're producing about 46% of the beer market. With this merger, they could produce as much as two-thirds of the beer market. So that would definitely create some sort of an antitrust issue when, say, two-thirds of the beers around the world is manufactured by this one firm.
I believe the regulators have already approved this deal.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, they were appeased by the fact that the juggernaut had to sell off pieces of beer brands across the world, including Snow, which is from China and the world's top-selling beer brand. So a lot of these regions like China and the European Union are picking up some of these beer assets on the cheap. And some analysts have come out to say that the merger is actually quite expensive. It will take them 10 years to really recoup the costs of the acquisition.
Yeah. Speaking about this cost of acquisition, they are on the course of acquiring many other companies because this takeover is just in the latest string of other acquisitions for the Budweiser brewer. And it was understood that they are going to go on with other mergers and acquisitions going forward, including Mexico's Grupo Modelo and Korea's Oriental Brewing. So they're not. This is not the end of it. They're going to buy some more.
It's so interesting because there's such an emerging market feel to it. I mean, the company was originally formed by merging a Belgian company, merging with a Brazilian company. So that's emerging market. Imagine Brazil owning one of the biggest breweries in the world. And you mentioned they're going to take over some breweries in Mexico and Korea. And the next frontier is actually Africa, because apparently Africa is growing so strongly, three times faster than the rest of the world, and now forms about 10% of the company's revenue.
You know, following this merger, right, apparently they do see, or analysts do see, an ability for them to actually get their operations into across 17 African countries. So we might see a growth area there.
7:48 right now. I'll be back with a look at local business news after this. BFM 89.1.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.